coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio. Located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
This is the Hagman Report for today. It's Tuesday, September 24th, 2024. I want to welcome everyone to the program today. We had, and originally we had the program scheduled with, you know what, I'm not going to say who it is, because we have rescheduled that for next Tuesday, but it has to do with the JFK assassination and the individual who fired from the grassy knoll. That's all I'm going to say. But it was a fascinating account, first-person account. Well, first-person through someone very close to him talking about what happened on that day in Dallas. So that's coming up next Tuesday. A couple of things. Nonetheless, I got a great program lined up for you. I'm looking forward to that, but today, great program lined up for you. We're going to be talking about the UN, what just happened. And Americans are oblivious to this, except for some people who are paying attention, like you. And something about the FCC, what they have done. Some anomalies with respect to the investigations into the assassination attempts of Donald Trump. Very important, because this exposes certain aspects of the deep state and what the real motivation is here and the real intent, and laying out the very fragile groundwork or the fragility of the time, really any time between now and Election Day and thereafter, because this is not going to stop. I'm actually going to be citing from confidential documents that, when I say confidential documents, documents that we created that are confidential to the source, but I want you folks to know exactly what's going on, because if you don't, you're not going to understand the bigger picture here, and the bigger picture is important. So we've got that going on. I also want to remind people tonight, at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, folks, I'll be appearing on Wisconsin Christian News talking about that subject, about the assassinations, our investigation into it. And it's been very, very extensive, very extensive. Others have our documentation. And I'll just leave it right there. You've heard some of this by bigger names than me, believe me. But the origin has come from just a fine team of investigators, including people from Shatter Ops and Save Them, of course, here at Hagman PI. And that does include the Pink Panther of them all, Eric the Tech. Pink Panther, what do you think? I'm telling you.
The insulation guy.
The insulation guy. That has different meanings, and all of them apply. Yeah, before we get to that, I just want to thank you for supporting this platform. Without you, without your support, we would be nowhere. And look, I've got to say, support is getting very tight. I really, my heart of hearts, wonder if we are going to be here in 6 months. I do that. Now, there are going to be some changes we're going to announce. Very, very good, exciting changes. But that's our last hurrah. I'm going to tell you right now, that's our last hurrah. I was talking to Steve Quayle about this, and we're both kind of on the same page on this, but I'm not going to speak for him, but I'm just saying that, hey, you know what? You know, if people want the news, or if people want information that they cannot get elsewhere, and they're not going to get elsewhere, trust me, because we go out and find the truth and deliver it. But if we can't do that without your help. And I want to thank from the bottom of my heart every single person who has sent anything. I mean, even a kind note. I read all of the mail. I can't answer all of them, but I read all of the mail. I read your notes. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for those who do support us, and we really appreciate that. And speaking about people who support us, you know, we do have a litany of people, corporate sponsors as well, including, you know, this is one thing that can help all of us. And let me just get right into it. threeharmfulfoods.com/Hagman, threeharmfulfoods.com/Hagman. You know, we live in, the most advanced era in human history. And there have really never before been more medical breakthroughs than there are right now. So why are millions of Americans more unhealthy and overweight than they've ever been? Ask yourself that question. Well, according to the U.S. Board Certified Physician, Expert Nutritionist, Dr. Amy Lee, one of the main reasons is three harmful foods that are being passed off as health foods all over the country. And wait until you hear this, because these foods can cause weight gain, clog your digestive tract, deplete your energy, and wreck your skin. They're banned in other countries. Yet, shockingly, they're still legal here in the U.S. And it's time someone shined a light on what they are. Well, Dr. Amy Lee does just that while explaining how the side effects from these foods are wreaking havoc on the health of millions of Americans. And the great news is this. It's easy to stop and reverse this damage by simply learning which foods to avoid and how to spot them. And by doing so, you can experience easier weight loss, smooth digestion, vibrant energy. To find out these three fake health foods, go to threeharmfulfoods.com/Hagman. Remember, two N's on Hagman. That's threeharmfulfoods.com/Hagman. Or just click on the link in the description box below. And after years of extensive study, Dr. Lee had put together a very, very revealing video, totally free to you, the public, so you never get duped by these foods again. So find out all you need to know by and regain control over your body at three. That's the number three. harmfulfoods.com/Hagman, or as I said, just click on the link in the description box below. Please do that. You're going to be better off for it. I'm telling you, it's really something to, you know, when you take a look at what's going on with the FDA and all of this stuff, you're going to find out what's good for you and what isn't. Not through the lens of the FDA or of these pseudoscientists, but really from the people who know what's going on. All right, so let me tackle the big subject first. And this is while everyone was distracted by various other things. Folks, the UN just adopted this Pact for the Future, which lays the foundation for this new globalist order. Now, this is important for people to understand because you and I, we don't have any say in this. This is via the Economic Collapse blog, but it's posted on America First Report as well. It does read that while everyone was distracted, the global elite got exactly what they wanted. Now, just two days from right now, the UN adopted the Pact for the Future, and the mainstream media in the Western world almost entirely ignored what's been happening. If you look at that, if you look right there, you've got to read this article. The headlines urge us to keep focusing on Harris and Trump and all of the shiny trinkets that are all around us, but the vast majority of the population, they've never heard about this. We had mentioned this earlier in earlier shows that this was happening, and it's happened. The Pact for the Future. You can certainly at HagmanPI.com, when you click on the link for today's show, the headline, the title for today's show, click on that, and that'll open up a box, and I'll have all of the links. This will be in that list of links. Now, the text for this Pact for the Future, you've got to read it. It's available online, multiple locations. There is an embedded link in this article for that. but hardly anyone will ever read it. I'm telling you right now, because it's almost boring, but it's telling. But many of the most important provisions are buried toward the end of this 56-page document. I went through this document. I'm going to spare you in this segment here of going through that. But everyone should take the time to actually read this document, because our leaders just committed us to an extremely insidious globalist agenda that literally covers just about every conceivable area of human activity. That's right, without our consent. And I'll just say this, and you can keep that up. We have to fight back. We will fight back. I guarantee you this is going to bring that fight to your door and to my door. And I'm going to tell you right now, this, among other things, this is the last gasp of this globalist takeover of our entire planet, of our lives. And this is really, by reading this 56-page document, what I got from it was America is in the crosshairs of the UN and to take us down. And we've been sold out, too, by many people, by just about everybody in Congress, as well as this faux White House. Who in the hell's running our country? We don't really know. We know it's not Potato Head. We know it's not Mattress Back Kamala. That's right, Kamala. Okay. Those on the left watching this, I can hear their heads pop. But you know that's fine. Once the Pact for the Future was formally adopted. In fact, you can show this. This was formally posted on the UN, official UN website. And this is about, halfway down this article. It's an embedded or indented quote here. World leaders adopted a pact for the future that includes a global digital compact and a declaration on future generations. There it is right there on your screen. Thank you, Eric the Tech. This pact is the culmination of an inclusive years-long process to adopt international cooperation to the realities of today and the challenges of tomorrow. Thank God we have been unburdened, by the way, of what has been. Okay. The most wide-ranging international agreement in many years, covering entirely new areas as well as issues on which agreement has not been possible in decades. The pact aims, above all, to ensure that international institutions can deliver in the face of a world that has changed dramatically since they were created. As the Secretary General has said, we cannot create a future fit for our grandchildren with a system built by our grandparents. Well, you want to bet? Our grandparents had more moral fiber, backbone, and strength, and courage, and morality, and spirituality than anyone today, I would say, with a few exceptions. Writes economic class. Well, look, I don't want to live in a new global order that includes all people in all nations. Another page, I should add, on the official UN website, tells us that UN 2.0 is all about creating a modern UN family. No effing thank you. Halfway through the 2030 agenda, the world is not on track to achieve the sustainable development goals. Well, that's good to me. It's not too late to change course if we will rethink, refocus, and recharge. UN 2.0 encapsulates the Secretary General's version or vision of a modern UN family, rejuvenated by a forward-thinking culture and empowered by cutting-edge skills for the 21st century to turbocharge our support to people and planet. All right, yeah. You can read between the lines there, and look, you know where this is going. We strive toward this vision with a powerful fusion of innovation, data, digital, foresight and behavioral science, skills and culture, a dynamic combination we call the, quintet of change. Don't you just love the way they phrase this? It's about evolution towards more agile, diverse, responsive, and impactful UN organizations. It sounds cozy, doesn't it? Yeah, who wouldn't want to be part of that family, right? Am I right? Okay, so as it goes down, and this is an important article because it explains the gist of what's happening here. Sustainable Development Goals, that's the big deal. Sustainable Development Goals. Pretty soon, your gas stove, as an aside, is going to come with a warning label similar to that on the pack side of cigarette packs. I'm telling you, that's what's going to happen. Campfires? No, don't even think about it. Fireplaces? Nope, gone. Gas cars? Gone. Your way of life will be changed forever by this document, by this agreement. And you and I had no say in this. Well, yeah, we do. Because when they come for your stove, when they come for your car, when they come for your guns, when they come for whatever, okay, I guarantee you, we must fight. We must fight against this. And I don't care what that fight looks like, but there will be a fight. Maybe we waited too long. Didn't we wait too long? We could have avoided a fight had we stepped in earlier, had people been paying attention about this, stepped in earlier, but no. And this goes through the various issues. This article goes through the various issues. All right. But just think. The green agenda meeting the DEI agenda and policy, along with ESG, everything progressive and globalist is really this represents. The next time that there is a major global crisis, if there is one, whether it be war, pandemic, scandemic, whatever it might be, do you want the UN running things? Well, you're going to have it. And telling you what to do, that's what's going to happen through this agreement. Now, the Economic Collapse blog has written extensively about the Pact for the Future. Michael Snyder has done so. He's got a book out on Amazon. You can find that as well. But please do not think for a moment they're not going to play this card today and in the future and take our rights away from us in this fashion when we, the people, never agreed to that. So, folks, I wanted to alert you to this because this is something virtually no one is talking about, with few exceptions. It is, in fact, something that we really need to pay attention to. All right. Now, a couple of things with respect to what's really happening today. I want to go to video 5. This is cut 5 in our show notes. Kind of work around this, the major issue of today's show. And the major issue of today's show is we have right now an operative series of people, entities, both sanctioned by and associated with the Department of Defense, the military industrial complex, the deep state apparatus that is out to kill President Trump and to kill us and to change forever our way of life. The globalists, the deep state globalists, they know. They absolutely 100% know. They cannot win without cheating or without engaging in some other method of removing the America First agenda. Now, who heads that up? Of course, Donald Trump. But there are elements to all of this, components to all of this, because the intent here is to, just like it was in 2020 with that fraud election that took place, okay, they are attempting to do the same thing again, but knowing that they cannot necessarily rip the results of the election from the hands of President Trump, who stands for the America First policy, who stands to say, look, this UN pact, that's a bunch of BS. With the regime, not the administration, but with the regime that we have today, they don't forget, they planned on implementing this back in 2016 until such time as Donald Trump won that election. Well, they got smart in the 4 years hence, and they were able to make sure that didn't happen in 2020. And look what we have. We have this senile, dementia, cognitively impaired, pedo, hair-sniffing, piece of crap, piece of garbage, and his equally piece of garbage wife in the White House, sullying the White House up, along with this mattress back, knee pads Harris, who cannot articulate one policy note with respect to what she will do. It's just absolutely mind blowing when you look at people who believe in the lie of Harris, in the lie of Biden, in the lie of those people who are stenographers for the deep state, for these puppets of industry, puppets of corporations, puppets of this deep state. One of the things that we are that they are trying to convince us, and one of the talking points, and this again, this goes to the main thrust of today's show, is that crime is down. Hey, you know, you hear this all over the place. Crime is down. We talked about this before, and I want to slip this in here. It almost seems like a non sequitur, but it has everything to do with what's taking place today. This is cut 5 in the show notes, where crime is not down. Well, if you look at some of the statistics, and you can use this with your boss or with your coworkers or with your family. But the stats, they're showing crime is down. Well, why is that? Well, we've looked in this, and Julie Kelly has talked about this, and I've actually seen this because I'm tapped into, obviously, because of our licensure, we have access to various databases. And these databases show all sorts of things, whether it's violent crime or regardless of what it is, we have access to this information. And it was a couple of years ago that we noticed that certain things were missing from what once was there. Okay, so think about this. And I was talking with another investigator about this, Susan Daniels, as a matter of fact. We were talking about different things with our databases. She's licensed. She has her own, and I've got my own, and some overlap, and some are independent of one another. But to that database, to the very database, many things were extracted and have been cut out of the information. This cut explains exactly this concept. So when you hear, for example, well, murders are down by 15%. I'm just throwing that number out there as an example. That's not true. And you might say, well, why? But look, there's the stats. Well, listen and watch this and understand why it's not true. Here it is, cut 5.
The vast majority of police departments have not been, or the majority haven't been reporting complete data to the FBI in 2022.
What do you mean by that?
31. Well, they changed the reporting system in 2021. And in 2022, for example, 31% of police departments didn't report any crime data to the FBI. Another 24% only partially reported crime data to the FBI. And so, we don't have.
Well, let me just ask you this. I mean, not even complete. It's not even near complete. If a third of the police departments don't give you any numbers, any information, any reports on crimes, whether they're small, medium, or large departments, how do you base anything on that?
Well, they try to guess what the missing data is, but In 2022, naturally, for example, you had three of the five largest cities in the country. Their police departments weren't reporting data. You had the New York, Los Angeles, and Phoenix police departments were no longer reporting crime data to the FBI. In 2023, Los Angeles and New York will still not reporting crime data to the FBI. And so they don't put down zeros in there. They try to guess what they think the missing numbers are for all these different cities and police departments that they're missing. But there are issues about how good of a job that they're doing with that.
Yeah. So they're just guessing. Spin the wheel.
Think about this. You've got really roughly, well, as he said, 31% of the police departments are not reporting any crime stats to the FBI. That was back in 2021. The same thing, really, in 2023 with roughly 21% reporting partial statistics, some tossing in arbitrary numbers because those numbers represent also funding to those various locations. Without getting too far into the weeds here, it would be good to show, for example, New York's crimes down and their policies are working. So they receive additional federal funds, supposedly earmarked for that continuation of that plan, when in fact that number or that money is diverted elsewhere. But the thing we noticed is roughly about half of the police departments, including some of the largest departments, the jurisdictions across the U.S. are not reporting numbers, or the numbers that they're reporting are so absolutely so much lower than they actually are. It creates this skewed number. Why do I mention this right now? Because those people who erroneously believe that crime is down, one of the communist goals, by the way, of the deep state, of these people that are engaged in this, one of the goals is to hide the true crime figures from the public, to give them obviously a false sense of security, saying that our policies are working. Now, part of that, which this did not get into, is something called migrant crime. I realize that the word migrant is really kind of not the word to use, but okay, the illegal invaders that come into the country, there's a special section that there should be, I should say, the special section that shows that these illegal invaders, in addition to engaging in the crime of coming here illegally, again, a crime by itself, are also creating additional crimes that above and beyond what would be normally reported. And you find out that they are responsible for a disproportionate of violent crimes, including rape, robbery, and murder, than the people already here in the U.S., here legally or born here. So you, and the true number getting associated with that, the true number of the illegal invaders in this country, it's not 10 million, 12 million. It's not even 21 million. The true number is 35 million. Think about that for a second. 35 million illegal invaders in this country. Okay. Hold all of that thought, that information. So you have crime not being down. You've got this thrusting of, going backwards, you've got this thrusting of this UN agenda down our throats, which allows and is connected to this illegal invasion, because part of this is being without the borders. And part of this this UN compact is this socialization, or more appropriately, communization of the U.S. by striking at its soft underbelly, that also includes attacking or declaring war on the most vulnerable among us, whether that be the elderly, in including the most vulnerable, the most productive among us, store owners, shop owners, and who are feeling the brunt of this? It's all of the above. So that's part of the UN agenda. And then our own institutions are falsifying the reports about what is really taking place, which is being mimicked by who? By the media, the stenographers of the deep state. You get where I'm going with this. Now, meanwhile, you've got something else going on. And as much as I dislike much of the politics of Robert F. Kennedy Jr., I'm not on board with a lot of things he says. One thing he's spot on about is the health of our nation. We are getting pummeled by every side. We're being pummeled by this invasion. We're being pummeled by the crime. We're being pummeled by just a number of different things. And we are being told by the media, hey, everything is fine. I just want people to know that this is not, these are not independent issues that we're talking about, although they can be looked upon independently. But what they really are part of the same, they're spokes of the same wheel. All right. Now, RFK does, this is cut four. RFK Jr. breaks down what's taking place right now with the jabs and with the foods and with the mRNA into our food supply, into our so-called vaccination schedule. It takes 80, like you heard yesterday, it takes 80 injections of these vaccines for a child to be enrolled in elementary school. 80. When in 1985, I think it was 3, maybe 4 or 5 at the most. But that all changed in 86, really 86 through 89. And RFK talks about this. But this, again, is an act of war that's embraced by the UN. It's propelled by the UN. It's and down through the United Nations into our National Institutes of Health through NAIAD, through the CDC, through the FDA. They have been weaponized. So this health has been weaponized by these. And again, yesterday's show really laid this out, but this has been weaponized against us because they don't want, when I say they, I'm talking about these movers and shakers, they don't want us reproducing. They don't want our children to have children. They want to replace the people here in the United States with the third world detritus that they're importing. And if those words are offensive, too bad. That's what it is. But listen to this. Again, you can think about this as an independent silo among many farms, so to speak, or you can look at it as part of the process. But listen to what RFK says about the early days of vaccinations, when the true definition of vaccinations, autism and CDC studies. This is cut four. Here it is.
So, you know, there's a number of things that happened in 1989, but it's those diseases, all these autoimmune diseases suddenly appeared. I never knew anybody with juvenile diabetes. When I was a kid, a typical pediatrician would see one case of juvenile diabetes in his career. Today, one out of every three kids who walks through his office door has it. Something happened. Why isn't anybody talking about this? Rheumatoid arthritis suddenly exploded. Lupus. All these autoimmune diseases, you know, Crohn's disease, these exotic diseases, nobody ever heard of when I was a kid. Now they're everywhere. And so you have allergic diseases, you have neurological diseases and autoimmune diseases, and obesity suddenly appear around 1989. And so there's a number of things that could be blamed for it. Well, the CDC thought, it may be the vaccine schedule. Let's check. So they looked at one vaccine, which is the hepatitis B vaccine. They looked at kids who had gotten it in the first 30 days, and then they looked at kids who had not gotten it in 30 days. In other words, kids who got it later or didn't get it at all. And they compared these two groups. And among the kids who got it in the first 30 days, there was a, I think it was a 10,000% increased risk for a later subsequent autism diagnosis if you got in the first 30 days.
Wow.
So they immediately knew what was causing it. Oh, I know it was. It was 11.35, so it's 1,135% increased risk. And so they knew immediately, it's called a relative risk of 11.35. If you have a relative risk of 2, causation is presumed. This was 11.35. The link between cigarettes, smoking a pack of cigarettes a day for 20 years and getting lung cancer is a relative risk of 10. This was 11.35. So they knew what it was. And then they had an emergency meeting that they called. They didn't want to do it on CDC campus because they thought it would be susceptible to freedom of information requests. So they did it in this remote retreat center called Simpsonwood, which is a Methodist retreat center on the wooded banks of the Chattahoochee River, in a remote part of Georgia. And they had all of the big panjerums from the vaccine industry, from the pharmaceutical industry, from the universities, who are the ones who test the vaccines, from NIH, CDC, FDA, the World Health Organization, the European Medical Agency, and they all got together for 2 days to talk about this study. The first day, and somebody made a transcript of it. And that transcript was given to me. And I published excerpts from it. But the first day, they're all talking about, oh, my God, you know, the lawyers are going to come after us. Nobody can deny this. This is bulletproof. You know, there's no way to argue with this. This is real science. We can't, you know, what are we going to do? The second day, they spent talking about how to hide it from the American public. And
okay, you can cut it right
I
there.
Publish these things.
You get the point, right? And you can watch the entire clip, HagmanPI.com. You get the point. So, again, this is another method of attack, much like the China virus, much like, and that is kind of a misnomer because you have people like Fauci. You've got people like Peter Daszak, Ralph Baric involved, and Francis Collins, of course, involved in the creation or assisting in the creation, thereby involved in the creation of the SARS-CoV-2, or what is known as COVID. So you've got this weaponization of viruses. You've got this weaponization of childhood immunizations. You've got schools refusing to accept children into the schools without these immunizations. The reason I'm bringing all of this up, these are all data points around the epicenter of what I'm talking about today's program. And the epicenter is to kill the America First agenda, to take away your abilities to, number one, speak out, number two, protect against it, and thirdly, they want you dead before you have a chance to do either. All right. Another silo, if you will, or another tactic that we all face, I've faced it personally, and you, I'm sure at some point you may, perhaps, but another tactic, and for sure Donald Trump has faced this, is lawfare. Because if there's always a fabric that's in a book by James Files, Pamela Ray Files, Primary Target, one thing that is always the case, and I believe this truly, is before they exterminate you, if you are a person of prominence, influence, or whatever, they must ruin your character, in a way nullify you, make you a pariah. And then, of course, they'll take you up. This is what is happening with President Trump. And this is what will be happening to each one of us on different levels and scales. But this is a video one. This is perhaps one of the best, and I would share this with everybody I know, this is one of the best summations in reply to a journalist by Megyn Kelly. This is one of the best summations of the Lawfare cases against President Trump. Pay very close attention to this, because this Megyn Kelly, who is a lawyer herself, like her or don't like her, I don't care. She wipes the floor with this guy. I mean, with this guy in terms of Lawfare. All of this is Lawfare. This is another component, another scope, spoke in the wheel that leads directly to this deep state dominance. That the final gasp of this cadre of entities and individuals who want to take us out. Watch this. This is cut one masterclass from Megyn Kelly.
We look at the five cases, you know, 6 months from now, a year from now. Let's assume all five of them go to trial. He's guilty of three so far.
Wait, what do you mean he's guilty of three so far?
Well, he's been convicted of three, sorry.
What do you mean? No, he hasn't.
E. Jean Carroll was guilty.
That was not a conviction. That was a civil case.
Okay, well, yes, so that's what I'm talking about. So that
okay,
one,
but there's a big difference.
It's still, he was convicted. He was guilty of that. He got settled. In the Trump organization, they're guilty there.
It was still civil, libel.
Yes, of course. But these are the cases we're talking about. And in the third one...
She's a lawyer, right?
Yeah, of course. And in the third one... I'm just talking about the five cases. Yes, some are civil, obviously, and some are not. Some are criminal. But if we look
you
at all five
three
cases,
convictions. Now you're walking it back.
I'm not walking it back. There's
Get
three in which he was...
You should walk it back.
Okay, I'm so glad Megyn is here.
Of the five, three of them, he's either guilty or...
He got a bad result.
Yeah, got a bad result. There are two more. If he is found guilty of those two more, Megyn, and five of five, he had a bad result. Way to frame it. Will you chalk all five up in your mind to five different jurisdictions, five different prosecutors, five different juries and or judges, all conspiring to get him?
100%.
Okay.
Yes.
That's all I wanted to hear your answer to. Five different jurisdictions.
Yeah.
You think it's all
Lawfare. I mean, E. Jean Carroll, they changed the law so that she could bring a civil lawsuit against him, and she did. New York went 87% for Joe Biden. That fix was in right from the start. The fraud trial that Letitia James brought against him has never been brought. There's no victims. The banks who were involved said, we didn't lose a penny. What are we doing here? We weren't damaged. Yep. Nobody was complaining except Tish James, who ran for office saying, I will get him. Then you have Alvin Bragg, who's a George Soros-funded prosecutor who doesn't like to prosecute any crime in New York City, where I live for 17 years, except if your name is Donald Trump. Let's go down to Georgia, where Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade couldn't keep their libidos in check long enough to actually bring this case against Donald Trump. It's a repeat of what was happening in January 6th up in the case with Judge Chutkan, who loathes Trump and has sentenced almost every J6 defendant to way more jail time than their counterparts would get. Those are falling apart because of presidential immunity, which was handed down by the Supreme Court, who said you cannot bring a criminal case against a sitting president for any official act. Those cases have been gutted. Also, a Supreme Court ruling saying the same on January 6th defendants in general. And that leaves us with Florida and the documents. And Trump has torn that apart because Jack Smith wasn't properly appointed and isn't the right counsel. But there are other issues. They haven't even gotten to presidential immunity there. And so that one's going nowhere as well. And by the way, they're going to appeal it up to the 11th Circuit. Circuit short out. The 11th Circuit is conservative. And thank God, so is the current Supreme Court. They're not going to tolerate that nonsense.
Let me ask you both.
So you've got Lawfare as a tactic, as a the weaponization of our legal system against people like you and I, but specifically against Donald Trump. In that clip, the fact that the deep state denizens are getting very, very well, they're battle wounded. Now they're searching for other methods to shut us down, to kill us essentially, and to change the entire complexion of the U.S. I also bring into, and I didn't put this in the show notes, but I also want to mention this. Breaking today from yesterday, I believe it was, or maybe it was from an early morning hearing, The FCC just fast-tracked George Soros' purchase of over 220 radio stations before November's election. Radio stations here in the U.S., these stations reach over 165 million Americans. Now, this has never been done before. You have the FCC, composed of three Democrats, two Republicans. The vote to approve this was on party lines, all right? And you have essentially right now a consolidation of communications. This is another way, another spoke on the wheel that the deep state, that the people, who the non-elected bureaucrats are attempting to take over our nation. I toss that in here because it's extremely important for people to understand the information that is getting to your neighbor, your friend, people who are not watching this podcast or broadcast like this are not getting this information. What they're getting is this stenographic transcript of what the players want them to know. And that's it, period. And this is why. So you've got to take a look at the FCC, which, along with the DOJ, has been weaponized. Again, I'm kind of drilling down into the epicenter of what I want to talk about, what this episode is all about. All right. Now, we have the bottom line here is they've got to take all of us out. They've got to take away the America First agenda, the Make America Great Again agenda, and they're trying to do this from the top down and the bottom up. From the bottom up, you still have J6 defendants rotting in jail. They're political prisoners. You still have organizations like Sedition Hunters, which is based overseas, that is working to provide the Department of Justice with information about people such as yours truly and others, and saying, hey, we're part of this conspiracy to overthrow the government, when none of that is true. Okay, so what do we have here with respect to taking out President Trump? We have seen in the last, again, the dying grasp, the death grip to get rid of America First. The person behind it is Donald Trump. Okay, so what has happened lately? You had two incidents that can be clearly, it's more than two, but two specific assassination attempts. You also had possible chemical, biological, even a radiological event take place in Tucson. I believe it was Tucson, two Sundays ago. But with respect to the latest assassination attempt, Jesse Waters talks about this. This is, let's see here, this is cut two. And nobody except Jesse Waters can actually do this. Now, the lead here is not the fact that that President Trump came closer to dying because there was the gun was chambered with a live round. That's not the lead. The lead comes after that. Let's play cut two and I'll explain.
It was closer to death on September 15th than we thought. In a new federal court filing, we learned that Ruth had been staking out Trump at Mar-a-Lago and at his golf course for weeks. Even more chilling, investigators who sacked the sniper's nest found the rifle with the scratched off serial number had a bullet in the chamber. And when the feds caught Ruth, they found two sets of license plates and six cell phones in his car, one of which Googled an escape route from Palm Beach to Mexico. So why did Ruth have so many phones, and where did he get the fake plates? We're also learning about a strange box the feds claim that Ruth gave to a mysterious civilian witness months before he tried to take out Trump. The feds say this box contained four cell phones, ammo, tools, metal material, and some pipe, and a series of handwritten letters. The FBI released a photo of what they say is the first page of Ruth's letter. The FBI says this witness took a picture of the first page of the letter and sent it to the FBI 3 days after Ruth was assassinated. And the FBI is using this picture from a mysterious witness of a letter that we don't even know if they have custody of in a federal court filing. So in this purported letter, the FBI says Ruth was motivated to kill Trump because he believed the former president was unfit and destructive to America's moral fabric. Does that sound familiar?
The American people must decide whether Donald Trump's assault on our democracy on January 6th makes him unfit for public office.
I've been saying for now well over a year, he is not fit to serve.
Donald Trump is not fit to be the job of president, to be the commander in chief.
And he literally is putting to the test this invisible moral fabric.
Ruth's letter purportedly says that he failed to assassinate Donald Trump and that he was offering $150,000 to anyone who could finish the job. So the Biden administration just released the assassin's manifesto that put a $150,000 bounty on Trump's head and called him unfit to serve. The same language Biden's used. The FBI wouldn't release the Nashville trans school shooters manifesto because they said at the time they didn't want to inspire more violence. But they published this guy's manifesto? And why'd they only cherry pick the first page? What else is in these letters? Law enforcement tells us publishing Ruth's letter is basically giving the public a blueprint for the next assassination. And who the hell is this mysterious witness? Is he in custody? He sounds like a co-conspirator. And what kind of witness, you know, you get a box from someone and you don't open it? Was he following instructions? And then he didn't give it to the feds until 3 days after the assassination attempt. And why is Ruth writing letters assuming he didn't finish the job? And does the FBI even have custody of this letter? Or did they just take a screen grab from a mysterious witness and submit it to the court?
It's not just the FBI. It's the Department of Justice. Folks, tune in tonight to Wisconsin Christian News TV. Go to wisconsinchristiannews.com. And I'll be appearing there with Rob Pugh. And I believe the way this is set up is you can chime in. You can be part of the audience via Zoom, and you can certainly ask questions. But I do know things about this that have not been reported yet, and I intend to disclose them on Wisconsin Christian News tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, having said all of that, if we go to page 2 in the show notes, this is Conservative Treehouse. This is about that specific letter. And there are so many problems with this, but one of the things I've seen is there are similarities between what happened in Florida and with what happened in Butler, Pennsylvania. You've got to take away, and folks, I'm not trying to disparage any well-meaning citizen journalists out there. You've got to take away some of the white noise, the chatter, the unauthenticated information. Okay, about what is really going on and to drill down into the truth. But this Conservative Treehouse writes, look, the DOJ releases this letter written by Trump's attempted assassin promising to pay $150,000 for someone else to finish a job. This was written allegedly long before this attempt took place. What is wrong with this picture? And why don't we have the Tranny-festo, of the Nashville shooter, transgendered shooter, Nashville. But we have this. What is this? What is the point of releasing this? The writes the Sundance on Conservative Treehouse. The Department of Justice released a letter, purportedly written by Ryan Wesley Ruth, the man accused of attempting to assassinate former President Trump on September 15th in Florida. Now, this is part of a court filing. If you dig into the court filing, which we won't do today, you can see where this letter fits within the DOJ filing. And no matter how you look at this, this is nothing more, at least in my view, than an attempt to place this bounty on the head of President Trump by Merrick Garland himself, along with Christopher Wray. There's no other reason to release this in the manner in which they did. Okay, so the alleged genesis of this letter comes from, as Waters said, somebody received a box from Ruth saying, hold on to this box. It was a box of his belongings. After the failed assassination, reportedly this friend opened the box, discovered this letter, and took a picture of it and sent it to the FBI, which was the actual, that picture was from that individual who took a picture of it and sent it to the FBI. It wasn't because the FBI had possession of the letter, which in and of itself, it hurts my head to think about this. If you make this part of a Department of Justice filing against this Ruth character. Now, immediately people notice how the Department of Justice would never normally publish a letter or a manifesto that would stimulate the mentally unstable, which this does. However, when it comes to Donald Trump, all bets are off. The DOJ, FBI customary defense moves are thrown out. Remember, Donald Trump is their target, never the victim. And I'm telling you this and repeating what Conservatory House said. If the Department of Justice did not want someone to follow up on the bounty from this guy, they wouldn't release it. After all, it's dangerous. And there's another question. How did this guy, who couldn't even keep up on child support payments, afford his house in Hawaii and have the ability to offer a $150,000 bounty? How did he assemble that for the head of President Trump? There's a picture within that article that portrays President Trump. The important thing to know about an assassination or an attempted assassination is not who fired the shot, but who paid for the bullet. That is exactly right. Keep that, read that article, and even dig down into the indictment itself. One more video. This is one of five, and you've heard and seen this before, but this plays into, again, the nugget that's involved here. You know what? I'm going to leave that. You can watch that on your own. That's cut three in the show notes. But here is my closing thought. We were tasked with looking into the Butler assassination, creating a pattern of life of Thomas Crooks. That's what we were doing. That happened, of course, on July 13th, 2004. Because such events don't normally happen in a vacuum, we felt compelled to add elements to what has been described as the second assassination attempt, that with the Ruth character, that occurred 64 days later on 15 September 2024. Investigators infused that information and data from the latest attempt and have been researching and investigating both events. Listen to me carefully what I'm saying here. Our method and manner of investigation have been to treat both instances as independent from one another. However, noting possible overlaps in both witness accounts and geolocation data. That's what we've been doing. We've done this to cast a wide net, pulling information that admittedly, primarily, but potentially are common to both events. In addition to investigating both events, we also took into account the 19 September 2024 announcement by Representative Gates that there are currently five known assassination teams in the U.S., two or three of which are reportedly foreign, two domestic, of course. Out to kill President Donald Trump. Think about that letter, but also think about the fact that the DOJ, FBI, they know about these teams, right? If you know about them, where is the proactivity with respect to those teams? If they are known, there should be some proaction there. Okay, now, it should be noted that we have taken steps to avoid creating patterns where none exist, as opposed to identifying where they do exist. This labor-intensive process is ongoing, but our findings are disturbing. And I will say this, our updated tactical approach to our initial assignment continues with these important and potentially related additions introduced as described. Now, as we asserted initially and continue today, our initial reporting of this, which was early in the month, reiterated, and as reiterated in additional reports, our findings into, for example, the pattern of life of Thomas Matthew Crooks, age 20, strongly indicate that he did not act alone. There are similarities that overlap between Crooks and Ruth, and I'm telling you right now, with the profiles of each, although they're starkly different, other similarities exist where they should not. It is here that our finding indicates that at least one active network in support as previously outlined, corresponds with Gates' recent disclosure. Folks, I'm telling you right now, the threat is not over. It's there. The next 40 days and the next 76 days after that are going to be the most important days in this time period. God bless.